Hey friends, I'm Rebecca Miller, and this is the I Can Relate podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I'm excited to be with you today, and I'm excited about our guest, Ashley Jupp. Her amazing story is truly going to encourage you. I also would love for you to share this episode with someone. There are many women out there who have lost a child, and so this will be an encouraging episode to help them on their journey. So please take a moment to think of someone and then share the episode. Also, if you haven't subscribed or given some stars yet, I would love for you to do that. This helps people find the podcast and be encouraged. So let's jump right in to today's episode with Ashley. Hey, okay. Ashley, it is so great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm seriously so happy to be here.
Yes, and I'm excited for you to just share your story today. Ashley, first of all, I just want to know.
Yeah.
Give me like three top things that you just like absolutely enjoy in life.
In life. Okay. Coffee.
Yes.
Wait a minute. I should have started with my Bible. Let me start over.
Well, maybe I Bible. Should ask the question and say non-spiritual Besides. Things.
Non-spiritual. Okay.
You don't feel like guilty because you don't need to feel guilty.
So Bible and prayer are a given. Okay. So coffee. I love being outside in nature. Hiking is one of my favorite things to do. And what's another thing? I love consignment shopping.
Yeah.
I absolutely love consignment or thrift store shopping. I love taking a very small amount of money and seeing how far I can stretch it, how many items I can get with it.
Recently, I was able to go to Florida and we went to your church because Ashley is a pastor's wife in Florida. And there was this great thrift store. And I don't think you and I got to go to it. So
we didn't get to do it. So next time,
that's right.
We're making that happen.
Yes, that would be awesome. I again, do love thrifting.
Yeah, we'll do it for sure.
Awesome. So I would like for you to share with our listeners, changing gears now, and just share, first of all, like who you are, like how many kids you have, just a little bit about your life. And because I know our listeners that, you know, it kind of helps them connect better with the person that's being interviewed. So go ahead.
Okay. So I'll give just a little bit about me. My name is Ashley Jupp. I'm sure it's going to say that on there. I have been married to my husband, John, for 15 years this July.
Congratulations.
And he was my college sweetheart. although the first few years of college, I was not feeling it so much. But by the senior year, you know, we got it together and started dating. Kind of a whirlwind romance, but we knew each other. We had been there. We had been friends for 3 years at that point. So we have four sons that we get to raise here on earth.
So, you know, obviously, you know, there had to be a time in your life that you came to know the Lord. And of course, God has brought you all the way to where you are now and will continue on your grace journey. Through your Christian life till the end, right, of your days. But, you know, how did it start for you, Ashley? How did you come to know the Lord? And then from coming to know the Lord, you know, wanting to be in ministry.
Okay, so I was raised Catholic, very good Catholic home. I was, you know, a good girl for the most part. And, you know, even at a young age, I remember because it's my personality is very people pleasing, right? So it lends itself to you being good. It's not even that you're really good without sin. You just want to make people happy. Sure. But I remember thinking to myself at a young age, I wonder how good I have to be to get into heaven. You know, I was attending, it's called CCD. It's like Sunday school, essentially. Mm-hmm. On Sundays, and like I said, we were a pretty good Catholic family, but I just, even at a younger age, wondered how to know for sure I was pleasing God or having, you know, having his favor, or I didn't know what else to call it. I didn't know it was a relationship. I didn't know. And it was actually my older brother, Cliff, who got saved, and he started working on my family. and just, he was a burden for us. Mm. And so at a young age, I think it was 12 or 13, he had like won my mom to the Lord. He had explained the gospel to her. She got saved. Wow. And then we started going to, the Baptist church in town. And there was a group of teenagers getting baptized. And so they asked me if I wanted to join them. And so I did. And there was a little bit of like a class beforehand. And they said, "Are you saved?" And I was like, I didn't, you know, the people pleaser in me or whatever. I didn't want to say no. So I said, "Oh yeah, yeah, I am." So I kind of made a profession. And all through my teenage years, you know, I struggled off and on, but I really tried to live for the Lord. But it wasn't until Bible college, freshman year of Bible college, that I got reassurance of my salvation, because I couldn't really remember, you know, when we all got baptized in that like group, and you know, they were saying some Bible verses. I couldn't really remember what I prayed, you know, so I went ahead and I used, and of course I can't think of the reference. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And I used that verse. I remember praying it at my Bible college, like in the little courtyard, like by a bench. So now I can remember the place. I can remember what I, like what verse I claimed and said, "Okay, I am confessing and you promise to save me," you know, and really like, I don't know, just made it for sure. So it's one of those things where I could have been saved when I made that profession at a young age, but that was when I got reassurance. So then from there, of course, I was in Bible college, you know, like even then desiring to live for the Lord, I didn't quite know what that meant. But I remember someone saying, not everyone is surrendering to, you know, be in full-time ministry. So the fact that you're surrendering probably means, you know, that's what's going to happen basically. Mm-hmm. So I just stayed surrendered and I just stayed open to whatever it was God had for me. And, of course, senior year, started dating my now husband, and he was called to preach. And so I've been following him, you know, these last 15 years, and I love it.
I always want people to share their testimony and just how they came to know the Lord. I think that's so important, because I think it's important for the reason that she's about to talk about right now. She's going to share her story about losing a child. And if you don't know the Lord, it is probably one of the most difficult things to walk through, is losing a child. What you have gone through, you really couldn't have gone through without the Lord. Excited to hear what God did teach you through that time, because, you know, our faith, even though we're a Christian, we can never lose our salvation once we trust Christ, but our faith, We can doubt. We can feel angry. Lose kind of heart, right?
Absolutely.
Even losing our salvation, because we don't ever lose our salvation. Once we're saved, right, we're always saved, the Bible says. But we have a choice to make. And so go ahead, Ashley, and just share your story of your journey and pregnant with your son, Aaron, and then, you know, walking through the process of, you know, losing him.
So I'm actually going to start in December 2019. Do you remember 2019? Do you remember before
the pandemic?
Before the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
That was kind of the last normal month, right? Normal.
Yeah.
But we were on the way home from visiting my family for Christmas. We were on the way back. You know, they live in Pennsylvania. We had gone up there. We were on the drive back, and it's like a 17-hour drive. And we just, you know, we had our minivan packed, and as we're driving along, we're just, you know, I was sitting there with my iPad, and we were getting organized. And these are all the things we're going to do, all these plans and vision that we had, right? And I remember saying to him, you know, I am so content with our four sons. Like, I never thought I would be content with all boys. And I thought I would want to try for a girl, but like, just so you know, I am more than content and happy and good.
Yeah.
And this can be it. And we can take, you know, measures to, you know, like close that chapter, you know. And he agreed. And we just basically sat there and recounted how blessed we were. And, you know, God gave us four sons, and like, let's just be in this new chapter now where we're just raising them, and we're no longer in, you know, the baby year, you know what I'm saying? The baby yeah. stage and yeah. all that. And let's just like raise them for God and let's do this, you know? And we were like so excited and so just ready to, you know, make these different changes and things that we want to do. And it was about a month later, maybe 5 weeks later, that I had been feeling really sick, and I took a pregnancy test and saw that I was pregnant. And of course, you know, just after, okay, this is it. This is our plan. This is our plan, right?
Yeah.
And God said, no, I have a different plan. And it didn't take very long to be so excited and so thankful, because when, you know, how could you be anything but excited or thankful and know that it was from God, right?
Yeah.
And it was very short-lived, that we were, you know, worried about the future. And then it was like, okay, this is it. And, those next few weeks were spent, you know, waiting to get to that first appointment. I had the first appointment and it was just really standard. They barely do anything. And I went ahead and what they said was, you know, unfortunately, when you are 35 years or older, you are considered a geriatric pregnancy when you're pregnant. And so they said, all that means is you have access to different testing and, you know, it's really just to your benefit. Like you get access to all these different tests. And, one of them was, and I can't remember what it's called right now, but basically genetic testing that they could do for free, you know, that usually you'd have to pay for. So I can't remember what it's called, but we had the testing done and everything looked great. They saw nothing, you know, no signs of some of the typical things they look for, Down syndrome or some of the things that happen that can happen at 35 and older. Mm-hmm. And so then at that same time, part of that test, and it's really killing me that I can't think of the name, but it's a whole group of tests. But part of that is they tell you the gender. And so we were so excited to find out, we were having a fifth boy, you know, and honestly, as much as I said to you that I'd always want a girl, there's something so special and just our whole family dynamic is like that we're a boy home. So it would have changed everything, right?
Yeah.
So we were so excited and we had his name, Aaron Everett, Jeffrey Jupp. Aaron, we do Bible names for the first name. Everett was just a really neat name that we always loved. And also had the added bonus that because I was not getting my girl, quote unquote, he was going to have my initials. So we do two middle names for all of our boys. So it was going to be A-E-J, but with an extra J because the two middle names. And my initials are A-E-J. So Aaron Everett and then Jeffrey was actually named after my husband's father that passed away. And so very, very special. So we named him, we were so excited. I think it was a few weeks after that I had the, I believe it was at somewhere in the 18 through 20 weeks where they do the anatomy scan. And they said, this one's going to be a level 2 because of the fact that you are, once again, a geriatric pregnancy. We're going to do that level 2, I believe is what it was. And it's just going to be a little more detailed and, you know, that's the only main difference. And to be honest, I didn't think much of it that day. I thought, oh, I already know, you know, that it's a boy. That's the typical thing you get to find out. And all of that testing was so great. I just, like, I didn't see anything wrong. Now, I will say part of all of this is, you know, March 2020, everyone here listening knows what happened around the world. Everything kind of shut down, right? It was pretty crazy. So this appointment was, if I'm not mistaken, it was sometime in April. Things were still very weird. You know, tensions were high. We had been told 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, all the things, right? So we got to the door together, John and I did, to put our masks on to go into the appointment. I mean, this was, we have obviously four sons. And then prior to this, many years ago, we had an ectopic pregnancy. And I also have other health problems. So I've been in the hospital a lot in my life. And he always was able to go with me. You know, it was never a question. So we got to the door and they turned him away. And they said, I'm sorry, but he can't come in. You know, unless basically he was my caretaker, he can't come in. And so I already felt very uneasy and very, you know, I'm wearing the mask. Really, I think for the second or third time I had worn a mask. I'm by myself now. And I thought, okay, but this is no big deal. It's fine. And I even said to him, honey, they're just going to print out the cute pictures and like, I'm going to bring them out to you and it's going to be great. And of course, when they started doing the ultrasound, the radiologist got a weird look on her face, which of course I couldn't see all the way with the mask, but she got a look in her eyes, I'll say. And she got really quiet. And I was trying to talk to her, make small talk, get her to talk because I wanted to hear her voice and hear, you know, that everything was okay. And after a while, she said, I'm just going to go get the other nurse real quick. So she got the other nurse who came in and did the ultrasound again. And then they both disappeared. And by this time, I'm feeling really frantic and texting John, like, I don't know what's going on. But two nurses have been in here now. So now they come back and there's three of them together. And they walk into the room and I just feel the tears fill my eyes because I know what's about to happen, you know? And so it was at that point that they told me that there were several concerning things in different organs, but especially the brain. A lot of excess fluid, a lot of things that I didn't really know what it was, but it wasn't normal. And from there they said, you're going to need to have a fetal MRI done at Children's Hospital in St. Pete, which is about 45 minutes away. And it's kind of their specialty hospital where they can treat all kinds of things. And so that day, it was a few weeks later, I think, John actually did get to go with me. And I had that MRI done. And about, you know, a few days later, maybe not even, they called and they asked me to come in, asked us both to come in. And they let us know that Aaron had something called agenesis of the corpus callosum, which means very simply, the corpus callosum, which is in between the right and left parts of the brain, so it's kind of in the middle, never formed. And with agenesis of the corpus callosum, there is no chance, other than a miracle, of course, any God can do anything, right? But there is no chance for it to form. With other things that affect the corpus callosum, there is a chance for improvement, or but it just never formed, and so it couldn't ever form. Yeah. And on top of that, you know, I think at that point they shared a few other little things that were a result of that diagnosis that kind of went with it, and said, basically, you need to go home and prepare to have a special needs son and, you know, research and, you know, best case scenario, people that have have agenesis of the corpus callosum can lead, there's a whole range of what could happen, anywhere from, you know, not really progressing mentally to doing quite well with assistance. And so they said it's going to be somewhere in that range. But the more research you do, the more you can make yourself aware of all the possibilities, the better it will be. And so from there, we kind of shared it with the boys. We were sharing on prayer, you know, prayer requests everywhere on Facebook, in different places with our church, and just asking God for grace to be able to take on something that was really foreign to us. You know, what would this look like having a fifth child that had special needs? So that means all the other four children that were used to a certain amount of attention wouldn't have it. And, you know, just all of the considerations, right? Mm-hmm. All of the, you know, all of the statistics, the facts that the, you know, divorce rates are higher, parents with special needs, right? Yeah. Just all of those things as we researched. And, but we kept really asking God and believing for a miracle and believing that it was going to be the miracle that we wanted. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. Believing that God was going to heal him on earth. Mm-hmm. And believing that that is what would give him the most glory. I stopped myself. Actually, I'll say John stopped me just shy of joining forums on Facebook because I even thought, I'm going to reach out to moms that have children with agenesis of the corpus callosum. Like, God's going to use this, right? So that was the mindset. That was the complete mindset. At the same time all of this was happening, we had the privilege and exciting, you know, thing, you know, just happening for our family. We were able to purchase our first home. Mm. And it was such an answer to prayer and such, you know, such a blessing. And so we were able to purchase our first home and we moved in on Friday night, August 8th, and we were getting settled in for a few days. And we had even, by God's, you know, sovereignty, I'll say just how he, you know, orchestrates all the little pieces. We had taken off to do basically a staycation for that week because we wanted to just, you know, get stuff unpacked and moved into the house and all of those things get settled. And so all week, every day we kind of woke up and we're unpacking and doing different things. And, Thursday morning, August 13th, I went for a walk, which is, you know, was kind of my habit. I try to do that. And I got back and of course, you know, I was 33 and a half weeks. So after a walk, I would always try to lay down on my side for a little bit, you know, rest my back and all that. So I was laying on the floor in our bedroom and, just kind of resting on my left side. And John came in and he said something like, what's the matter? Is he getting you? Is he kicking you? You know, he's a dad many times over, to, you know, and even when they're, you know, inside of me, you know, he loves to like talk to him and, yeah. You know, he's very much like involved in that part. And so, he asked me that and then I, like, it occurred to me and I said to him, actually, no, he's not. And, that was like the first realization. So I started feeling my belly and it was like, how did I not notice, you know, he's usually jumping all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so he said, honey, no, don't get upset. Go downstairs and eat something and lay on the couch, you know, and lay on your back for a minute because it, you know, he's probably just sleeping, you know? And so I did. And he wasn't moving. So, I told him, take me right now. Something's not right. And I don't know. if it was a self-preservation mechanism, but I knew something was wrong, but I didn't think he was gone. You know, I just thought he's not being active because something's bothering him or something's wrong. So, when we got to the emergency room and, they took me right in, like immediately when I told them what was going on. And a doctor came in, she did the ultrasound, and there was nothing on the screen. And once again, you try to trick your brain that you're not seeing it. Mm-hmm. But you know how you usually see the blood flow and all of that. It was like just black and white. Mm-hmm. And when the doctor came in, she did the ultrasound again, and then I saw her just take a deep breath. Mm. And I know now that she was using every bit of strength she had, because she knew what she was about to say. And when she did it and she went to look at me, she looked me right in the eyes, and I looked away because I knew what she was going to say. And when she said, "There's no heartbeat," I felt the room spinning, because it didn't feel real. It's like the thing that you see in a movie that happens that's really sad, and then you get to walk away and move on, and oh, you know, let's watch a comedy now to forget about that sad scene, you know. And it just, I can't explain it, but it felt surreal in the worst way possible. And you know, there's just so many realizations that washed over me. It was like I had a baby shower my baby shower was a few days later, you know? And so it kind of came to me, you know, all of these realizations were coming to me. From there, she asked the doctor, my doctor came to the hospital and said, you know, you need to decide if you want to have a C-section or deliver vaginally. And I just remember thinking, this is so unfair. I don't want to do either, you know? And I just remember I was in shock. And I just was struggling, you know. So I labored. I decided to deliver vaginally. And I labored all that night and all day Friday. And I had Aaron on Saturday. And it was a very strange feeling. Because usually you work really hard and you labor, and then you get to hold like the reward, you know? And I just remember, it felt so unfair, and it felt so cruel. And especially, we didn't want to get pregnant. I don't know how else to say that, but we didn't seek to get pregnant this time. Yeah. And God allowed me to get pregnant, and then it felt like, you know, in that moment, it felt like he allowed me to get pregnant, and then he took him, you know. And why didn't he just not have me get pregnant, you know? Yeah. And those were some of the thoughts and some of the deep hurt. And I'm being raw and real, and I'm explaining. I didn't know what a stillbirth was, really. I knew, like, I had heard that women experienced it, and I knew like the technical term, It's any time between a certain period in a woman's pregnancy, you know, up until a certain amount of weeks, it's miscarriage. And then beyond that, it's considered a stillbirth. I know I knew that, but I never knew what went into that. I never knew the very definition of a stillbirth is that you could not prepare for it. It is sudden. It is unexpected. It is unpreventable. It is devastating by definition, right? Yeah. And I never understood. In the surreal moments, the surreal like weeks to follow, I had to have my milk come in. I had to have all the postpartum stuff. And I never thought about that. I never thought about what's usually a joy. Like my milk comes in so I can feed my baby. Now I'm researching, how do I make myself dry up? Because this is torture. You know? And so I can honestly say I never understood the depths of all the details. I never thought through the details. I always thought a stillbirth is just a, you know, one thing, but it's the loss of a child. It's a loss of a pregnancy, right? Because I was pregnant. Yeah. So now I'm suddenly not pregnant, but it's also a death. You know, it's like every bad thing at once. And I didn't know that this is what women experienced. And so that is the fullness of the story. I have so much more to share of like after and what God showed me through all of that, but that is the details of what happened.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm sure for you just to rehearse you know, those moments is definitely very difficult. And so that's why I want to hear about the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this is where I'm going to get emotional. Because it is Jesus.
Yeah.
Who is our rock.
Yeah.
In the most probably very difficult times. And it's not a cliche. It's not just a name.
Yeah.
It's truly the person, the Godhead, the Almighty, that truly can only do what he can do in, you know, restoring joy.
Yeah.
And peace. And even allowing you to surrender the feelings that you, because there's nothing wrong with how you were feeling. Absolutely. Right. We are human and the Lord knows that. But to just be able to still stay strong in your faith and not walk away from the Lord.
Right.
That you had a moment where you're like, this is unfair, but you were able to come back to Jesus. And that, I would love to hear that part. And I think, if anything, I think, you know, people deal with what you just dealt with and the heartache, but they don't know how to rise up from it. And so I think it's very important that we share the you know, that the story doesn't end.
You know? Exactly. So in those few weeks afterward, we had so much support, church family, friends. Oh man, we felt, I've never felt love like that, but still in that first week, I remember laying on that same couch that I had been on, you know, trying to feel him move. And it was just a rare moment that no one was there because we had so many family and friends in our house and trying to be with us and not let me be alone. But there was this rare moment where I think John ran out to the store. I can't remember. And I just laid there and I just started yelling at God, like, why did you do this to me? You know? And like, here I am, like, given my life to serve you. I'm not, you know, list, I was recounting all the ways. And I remember, like, that wasn't wrong, right?
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling, you know, I didn't hear him audibly say, but I knew in my heart that it was to help other people. I knew in my heart that, like, who do I think I am to be exempt from pain and trials of this world and suffering that was promised, right? We know.
Yeah.
And up until that point, my Christian life, you know, I knew of people that passed away. I knew people that passed away that I loved and cared about, but never my own child. Never. It was never this close. It was never this, you know, deep of a hurt. Yeah. And so it's easy, you know, it was easy for me to say, I trust God. I'll follow God. I'm surrendered. You know, I'm willing to serve in any way that he wants me to. I'm willing to, you know, accept his will for my life, until it was something that, I was not okay with. Yeah. And, you know, he is a good father. And so I don't know why, I don't know all of the intricate details, right? But what I do know, and that I do trust, is that Aaron is healed and whole, which was my main prayer request, was that Aaron would be healed and whole. He is with our Savior. He is better off than I am. He is loved and valued more by Jesus than I could ever love or value him. And although, you know, all of the questions that we have about the details and the inner workings and the behind the scenes and the things that God orchestrates, like, why did he just not allow me to get pregnant? And just, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
All of those details that we ask, all the why, and like you said, it's not wrong to ask why. But I can honestly tell you, my Christian walk, the ways that God has worked, I can't even begin to explain. You know, I'm a people pleaser by nature. I told you that in the beginning of this or somewhere along the way. But I think my Christian life was consumed with pleasing people and consumed with worry and consumed with, making sure I was worshiping the way everyone wanted me to, making sure I was doing things that people wanted me to, and not because I felt like that was what the Bible actually said and what God actually desired of me, but because I wanted to make people happy. And it was a lot more shallow, and it wasn't intentional, but it was a lot more shallow. And when you experience something so deep and tragic, it causes you to step back and say, why am I doing the things I'm doing? Yeah. You know, what are my motives, right? What is behind this? And through that evaluation and through just walking through what so many women have walked through that I never understood, and I never would have understood, right? You are as absolutely sympathetic and wonderful, you know, as you can be, you know, with each thing, we only know what we've experienced 100%, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, through this, through the healing that took place, where I feel so much peace, I feel sadness that, you know, sometimes when I see a baby, that's the age he would be, I wonder what he would be like. But at the same time, just knowing how, you know, God knew if he was here, the quality of life he would even have, right? And so there's so many things that bring me peace through that. But then also, this last year, or I'm sorry, 2 years ago, right after, a few months after it happened, I got to go to the hospital that we had him at. And they did this ceremony that they've done for years, an infant and pregnancy loss remembrance. It's for miscarriage, stillbirth, ectopic pregnancy. I got to go to it, and I went and went with my mom, and it was a really neat ceremony and really a comfort, you know. Yeah. Doctors and nurses were there, and different moms walking around, moms and dads and families, grandparents, aunts, uncles, you know, just supportive people. And I thought to myself, I want to be a part of that. I want to do that next year. And so I started praying about it. And actually, because of COVID being so crazy, I was calling them all summer long, and I kept getting transferred to different people. I kept leaving messages on voicemail. It was like everything that could possibly happen to discourage me from proceeding. But I just kept praying, like, even if they don't let me come and have a table, I'm going to come and I'm just going to encourage people. Yeah. And finally, a few weeks before, I got a hold of someone and they let us come. And a group of my like supportive, wonderful, amazing church ladies, it meant the world to me, honestly. They came and we had a table set up, and we had little goodie bags with like something that was very special was God kept putting hummingbirds on my heart whenever I thought about Aaron and how he just kind of fluttered in and out of our lives in that way, you know? And so I had these little stickers made that went on notebooks and little cards that were for grief counseling. And we, you know, we gave out those little bags, and some other comforting materials, and just sat and talked and let people talk and let them, you know, kind of share. And, you know, it doesn't take away, right? It doesn't take away the hurt. But when you know God called you to walk in something, walk through something, because you get to help other people, it gives your life that much more purpose. You know, there are definitely days, or have been days, where I just felt very discouraged about it. And sad, right?
Yeah.
But then knowing that God gave me four handsome little boys, yeah, that as long as he lets me, I get to raise on this earth.
Yeah.
You know, that is part of my purpose. Knowing that I still have breath to breathe, all those things, those have all been reminders for me that have been instrumental, in the healing process. Yeah. Reading scripture has been instrumental in the healing process. Sometimes, you know, seeing, I guess what people have gone through. Another thing that's been really instrumental is I can't sit around and just think about myself and think about being sad and think about any of that, or I'll just feel defeated. I have to stay busy serving others. And that kind of motivation is what keeps me moving and keeps me, you know, positive that there's a reason I'm still here. There's a reason, you know, yeah, God allowed what he allowed. And until he takes me, I just need to keep pursuing that.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And so, you know, another question that I've had, and I think this will be helpful for other moms, and I know you touched on this a bit, but, you know, any other thoughts that you would share with moms who are struggling with the loss of a child, or maybe women who are unable to get pregnant, they've struggled with that, or they've even had several miscarriages, or even just one miscarriage is very difficult. But just some things that you can share with them that can help them to be able to move forward and help them, yeah, focus on their purpose.
So I'll start by saying, with a lot of things in life, with a lot of tragedies or things like that that happen, almost anything you say sounds trite. Mm. So for me to say this right now, I have a few things that I had thought of that came right to my mind. but to even say it sounds trite. Okay. So with that little grain of salt, I will say that the first thing I would say is trust. And that's kind of three parts. So trust in his timing. If you are someone who is, you know, every month taking a pregnancy test, waiting to get pregnant, you know, that is your only goal and dream, and you just want to be a mommy. And, you know, that is not a struggle I ever personally walked through, but I can imagine the toll that would take mentally and just, oh, just how beaten down you would feel. You know, but just knowing the timing there, that, you know, it's interesting, and we don't know what God, we don't know, right? But we had an ectopic pregnancy between my first and second son. And it was actually to the point where we would not have my son, Micah, you know, if the other child would have been born. And so that's something we speculate on as humans with like a very limited understanding. We don't know. But the timing for me was that God had a plan for Micah to live on this earth. Okay. In that instance.
Yeah.
Now I understand that's also easy for me to say because I lost a baby and then had a baby right after. So I understand there's so much more to that. There's so many layers to that. But the principle of just trusting in his timing. So with wanting to get pregnant, with losing a pregnancy, you know, I was very candid and shared that we were not looking to get pregnant when we did. Yeah. And, which made it even more confusing in the healing process of me sort of sifting through it mentally, like, you know, I finally get on board and I'm so excited about, you know, about it. And then, you know, but just his timing with, you know, even the details that I'm the only one that got to hold Aaron, you know, just the way that Aaron touched lives, it was due to the timing. If it had been different and I had had a healthy pregnancy and he was born, he may have touched lives in a certain way, right? He may have gone on and, you know, become a doctor and save lives, or who knows what he could have done. But God didn't have that for him. He had him just to live for that certain amount of time. And because of that lifespan, it has lent to his life having a certain impact. That's the only way I can describe it, is his life has an impact he could not have otherwise had.
Yeah.
And as painful as it is, and as much as it doesn't make sense, to think about God's timing, and, you know, I was just about 34 weeks. I didn't even share this part actually, and not to reiterate, but they were actually planning, because of all the problems with him, they wanted the NICU to be there. They were planning to induce me at that hospital with a bunch of specialists available. About a week and a half later, or I think almost 2 weeks later, and it was already in the calendar. And so the timing that, you know, the timing was the way it was for a reason. Okay. I'll say that. And then trust his timing in the healing. I think I felt all kinds of pressure to get back to normal. Mm. I still remember the first Sunday, I think maybe it had been 3 weeks. I didn't go to church, you know, and almost 3 weeks we went in, and I usually sit like on the front row so I can just be like right there. If my husband like has any questions and can't remember things or whatever, I like to support him right there.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, I'm going to go in and it's going to be normal. And I'm just going to sit on the front row, not to mention all the postpartum. I don't know why I wasn't thinking clearly about all the emotions. Well, I got in there. As soon as I started to walk into the church, I just started crying and cried all the way through the singing. And I finally had to just go to the bathroom and couldn't even. And so that was the first Sunday. Well, then fast forward, and it had been maybe like 10 or 11 months. And actually a lot of healing had taken place and I felt really great. And I was up singing worship and everything, not back to normal. There's no normal, but you find like a new normal, right? Mm-hmm. I was up singing on the worship team and I suddenly was so overcome with emotion that I had to leave the stage. And if you know me, it's not that I'm not emotional. I do cry, but I would never leave the stage and embarrass myself. You know, that's embarrassing to me. That's like unprofessional. And, but I left the stage and what a couple of, the church ladies actually came and prayed with me. But I remember feeling really frustrated. Like, why am I still feeling it like this? And why did that come out of nowhere? Like, it just came out of nowhere where I just felt overcome with emotion. So I would say, just a reminder to let yourself grieve and trust the timing of the healing. The second thing is trust your purpose in all of it. You know, we have a purpose that we think, or we have a vision that we think is what's going to happen in our life. And even John and I, just, it makes me laugh now thinking of all the plans we made, you know, this is what we're going to do. And, I won't even bore you with it, but all the different vision we had for like side ventures and things we were going to do. Yeah. And God just redirected it all. And none of those things have happened. And God really just redirected, you know, and he kind of established my purpose. And I, you know, I don't have time now for petty drama. You know what I'm saying? I've seen the brevity of life now. Mm-hmm. I've seen how you think it's this, and then in the next instant, it's that. And so I'm not like, I'm not getting into fights or drama or worrying about any of that anymore. Not that I ever really was into that, but I'm saying, my purpose is solid now. My purpose is like, sure, you know, yeah. If ever it wasn't, it's sure now. And then the last thing that I was thinking was trust in the hope that we have. So many times I've thought about Aaron and felt so like sad, you know, not that he could have understood what was happening, but when there's just some of the hardest things to like accept that God allows are when it's like a baby or a kid who's just like sick or going through it and they don't know any better. And they're not even like, they haven't had a chance to be like mean and bad. And you know, we believe that the Bible says we are all sinners. Okay. So yes, technically, but they're not, you know, they haven't had a chance to really live it out yet. And so they're just so innocent. And it's why most people just, you know, love babies and children and you know what I'm saying? Would just feel, we put them in a different category at that age. And, but just the hope that we have, the hope that, I've been able to just tell myself and remind myself that Aaron is so loved by God, even more than me. I could have been the best mom ever. And by the way, I'm not. Ask my kids. I'm not. I have bad moments. I yell. I get frustrated. I want a clean house and it can't happen, right? All of the things.
Especially with
and no, they are not interested in my vision for our home at all. Okay.
One day they will.
And, but just thinking about Aaron, like in the best possible place with the best possible person, I feel happy for him. Like, yes, I feel sad for us. Yes, you know, if I could choose to go back and change it and have had a healthy pregnancy and have him and have five children, yes, of course. But this is what God chose, and I have so much hope. And I would encourage anyone, just that word, and I hope it doesn't sound trite, and I hope it doesn't feel annoying, because it can feel that way when you're getting advice. But trust that it's going to be okay. Trust that there's a plan. Just trust.
I really enjoyed your story and just really just a beautiful picture of who Jesus is in our life, even in the most difficult times. Mm-hmm. So thanks for being willing to be vulnerable and share it.
Thank you.
What a beautiful and powerful testimony by my friend Ashley. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode on the I Can Relate podcast.